Go Loud.
Have you seen some of the merch you can buy about 9/11? A lamp I saw once.
Yeah, for our heroes. Like, if you had that 16 euro now, you'd have a house.
I have to draw a line at eating an egg from a deli. Hello everybody and welcome to A Few Scoops. We are your Irish comedy news podcast. We aim to keep you informed without making you depressed. My name's Aoife Murr. I am an author and journalist. And here, the Jesse Buckley to my Paul Mescal. It's Colm O'Regan.
I'm vaguely from the south of the country. Yes, Colm O'Regan here.
Storm Chandra has had its way with me and Colm this week, but we are not having as bad a time as the poor old Conservative Party in England, who now are losing MPs like flies dropping. Rats off a sinking ship, I believe Pat Kenny said on News Talk this morning.
Yeah, at some point though, when does the world's tallest phone become the world's smallest iPad? Like, there's so many from Conservatives in Reform now. Is it... like practically the Tories still.
There are currently 6 Conservative MPs that have defected to Nigel Farage's Reform Party. That means Nigel Farage's Reform Party has more Conservative MPs now than it has original Reform MPs. But last week, probably their biggest get yet, their biggest signing.
And by get, you mean that they've got it, not...
yeah, not G-I-T.
Yeah.
Is Suella Braverman. So if you think you've heard that name before, it is because she is the former Home Secretary. She was more right-wing than most of the Conservatives around her. She resigned her Conservative Party membership of 30 years and said that she would continue to represent her constituency of Ferrum and Waterlooville. These places sound made up. The Brits have terrible names for stuff.
They have a right to live there.
So Suella Braverman's defection comes only a week after Robert Jenrick. So Robert Jenrick was very high up in the Conservative Party and he defected the week before Suella Braverman. But Suella Braverman is the biggest get so far as the former Home Secretary. So if you're thinking that you know the name Suella Braverman but you can't really remember where you know it for, it's because she was the Home Secretary at the heart of the Rwanda scheme. The harebrained idea from the Conservative government at the time was that they would deport people to Rwanda, even if Rwanda was not their home country. They paid millions to deport. I think only 12 people eventually were taken to Rwanda.
The cost per person was astronomical. You know the way, if you ever feel bad about if you've overrun your expenditure in the public sector here, do not. The Rwanda plan is reported to have cost £700 million sterling. Under it, a total of 4 asylum seekers went to Rwanda all voluntarily. Why, yes, I will go there for £175 million.
So it's also worth pointing out that this Rwanda plan and the immigration plan in general under the Conservatives was seen as horribly right-wing, very, very unfeeling, lacking in humanity and nigh on ridiculous. It's worth noting that Suella Braverman comes from a minority ethnic background herself. Both her parents emigrated to Britain in the 1960s from Mauritius and Kenya respectively, but I think they are both of Indian origin and she is of Indian origin herself. And it was noted that under... heard the rules that she was trying to implement, that her parents wouldn't have been able to come to the UK.
Yeah, pull the ladder up and all that.
Yes. Suella Braverman has moved to Reform. Reform now has 6 Conservative MPs, along with Robert Jenrick and Suella. They have Nadeem Zawawi, Lee Anderson, Nadine Dorries, remember her, and Danny Kruger. They have all joined Reform over the last 2 years. Lee Anderson, probably the most gaffe prone. He said that people unhappy with how Britain treats migrants should fuck off back to France.
How did he know they were from France? Was it
the, no, was I think
the
came.
Beret. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was known as 30p Lee because of the comments he made about food banks and said that poor families just couldn't budget.
I mean, technically true. You can't budget if you don't
have any money. Yeah. Lee Anderson also wanted to boycott the men's Euros in 2020 because he didn't like players taking the knee in a vow of anti-racism. He used to get Liz Truss and Theresa May mixed up.
That's understandable.
Both were his bosses for a time. But because they were both women, just couldn't tell him apart. It's worth pointing out that 20% of Reform MPs have a conviction for assaulting a woman. That's right. One of their MPs was done for punching his ex-girlfriend in the face. But, so this has obviously ruffled a lot of feathers in England. We've talked a lot about the fact that Nigel Farage, the stockbroker with a German wife who campaigned for Brexit, could possibly be the next Prime Minister. He has been eating the Tories' lunch for quite some time. The Tories have been in free fall since the last election. Their leader, Kemi Badenoch, is deeply unpopular. And Labour is actually losing votes to Reform as well, as much as they are losing left-wing voters to the Green Party, who is headed up by Zach Polensky. So Zach Polensky said about the new defections that, always keen for a rebrand, Nigel Farage could try Conform as his next incarnation, since 14 members of the former Conservative government have now tied their flag to the Reform UK mast. Conform is also apt, since it's very much an establishment party conforming to a harsh free market ideology with its belief in low wage, low tax, low regulation economy that pushes austerity, privatisation and cuts to public sector and welfare.
Like, so the Conservative Party, right, it's been around for centuries and it is...
God love us.
Isn't it like the Unionist and Conservatives were once pretty much one party?
Well, it's actually called the Conservative and Unionist Party. Yeah.
So... what in the North, when they look at Reform, because Reform, I presume, has no real ideological commitment to the North, does it? It doesn't really care.
So they have, so Reform had an electoral pact with the TUV for the 2024 general elections.
And the TUV make the DUP look like...
Modern Liberals.
SDLP.
Yeah. They are a very right-wing, unionist, loyalist party. The Northern Ireland Tory Party has said that Reform is a threat to the union because they will naturally not only turn people off, but also Nigel Farage has no care, duty or want for Northern Ireland. He has no interest. He doesn't understand it. And I don't think he really cares.
Could you see a scenario?
Up the rah, Nigel.
Where Sinn Féin, yeah. I mean, if you give him 60 quid, he'll say it.
Up the rah.
That Sinn Féin would do a deal with Reform in the cause of Irish unity. Is that a hypothetical? Like, I don't know, that there's a coalition, that the numbers add up in a certain way, and there's a confidence in supply from Sinn Féin in Westminster taking their seats because they will move something forward, or is it way more complicated than that? You know, the way that things that have happened.
I just say this? Sinn Féin, no matter what happens, are never going to take their seats in Westminster. Every so often, obviously, present company excluded, some columnist, some tit in the Irish media or British media will be like, oh, well, what if? What if Sinn Féin take their seats now? They're not going to do it. It's a redundant question. The thought that Mary Lou McDonald would sit and shake hands with Nigel Farage and say, thanks very much for the six counties, we'll be going now. It just wouldn't happen. And Irish people, especially north of the border, know that a handshake deal with the Brits means absolutely none. So they would be given short shrift and I think it would ruin their party forever. Okay. So I don't see it happening anytime soon.
Even if the numbers were so tempting.
Sure, even when it came to Brexit, Sinn Féin wouldn't take their seats. It's not going to happen. Like, they don't recognise the parliament, so they can't.
Okay.
I've always said it, Colm, but I really feel that there hasn't been enough games made about the very recent conflict and dirty war in the north of our country where 4,000 or 5,000 people were killed prematurely. But you'll never believe it. The Americans are at it again, and a Connecticut-based company called Compass Games have made a board game based on what they say is the military history, and a Troubles-themed game is now available on their website for $85. Now, Compass Games, this isn't the first of their kind. Mm. They have previously made a game about the famine.
Yeah.
They say that we're going to give them the right of reply because I am still a journalist, God save me. So Bill Thomas, the company's founder and president, said that the game is not in its final version. It's not even close to being final. It has to be played test, but they're doing a lot of development.
I like the idea that as they're working through the versions, they're having talks about talks.
Yeah.
About the board game.
A little tiny John Hume is walking away from the board game. Yeah.
And,
so.
And some members of their company aren't sure if they want to talk to other members of their company yet. So they're using other Americans as intermediaries.
Yeah. So he said, this is to protect history, not to make fun of it. From what I can pick up, right, it is played with 260 cards and a dice. I wish I was making this up. You can be the British Army, the Provisional IRA, the RUC, and it's played between 1964 and the years 1998. Now, I have seen one very small picture of this. So there, it's not like a Monopoly board. I don't know how you describe it, but there are things like that just say, the Nutting Squad, Sniper at Work, False Alarm, Steak Knife, Irish funds, Northern Ireland funds, budget, arms dump, sniper, power sharing, landmines, car bomb, Ulsterization, UK terror threat, Anglo-Irish relations. I don't know how the game works. I don't know, you know, if you go in as Gerry Adams, do you obviously not be involved in anything because you were never a member of the IRA?
Are you standing on the edge of the board? Well, actually, I suppose for Gerry Adams up until 1994, like if you get the Gerry Adams card, the problem there is you have to get another person to play for you.
Yes, yes. The instructions read that each faction may use primary and secondary actions analogous to its real world counterparts, or may choose from the 259 rich narrative cards divided into 8 key epochs in Northern Ireland's recent history. Epochs include the bloody years of the 1970s, the Ireland hunger of the early 1980s, when Margaret Thatcher battled Republican hunger strikers. Is that what we're calling it? When 10 men died prematurely? But okay. And then Target Mainland campaign of the 1980s, when a number of British civilians, innocent civilians, were killed by the IRA. So this man says, you know, this is to preserve history. And you'd think, of course, who would they get to inform them of this game? Who is writing the historical narrative for this game? Which academic or politician or person from the north of Ireland is informing this? It is a man called Hugh O'Donnell.
Yes, I think he'll be sound on that question.
Yeah, not as we know him, the Hugh O'Donnell from history. A different Hugh O'Donnell, who is a secondary school teacher from that troubled heartland of Scotland.
Well, you know, they played their part.
So I was on News Talk yesterday talking about this as obviously a journalist and someone from the north and a member of a family who lost someone through British state violence. I was on with a man whose wife was killed in the Oma bomb planted by the Real IRA in August 1998. He said he wasn't surprised. He said every day, you know, victims are told about the next nonsense that we have to put up with. And I agreed. I said, you know, I will sometimes read the most horrific things from troll accounts on TikTok and Instagram. Anytime I write about my family or anytime I write about the troubles, I'll have some gammon with a Union Jack in his username saying something really awful about my murdered uncle. You will have on the other side then people mocking the victims of IRA violence. You know, we have films, we have jokes, there's, you know, cocktails called Bloody Sunday. You know, there's just, and there was this debate on the radio about, well, should victims be informed when stuff like this has happened? That, I personally think, is ridiculous. There are board games and PlayStation games and films about World War One and World War Two and the Cold War and Vietnam and every other conflict around the world. So I don't think we can ask for special dispensation just because it's real to us. Because the Vietnam War is real to them.
Yeah.
So I think it's natural when history moves on that these things are going to happen. I don't have any faith that this board game is going to be well informed or well researched. I don't think many people in the north are going to buy it. And this is my real thought that I took away from it was, war is always a game to Americans.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't they make our war a game too? Because most wars for American people, it never comes to their door, and good luck to them. You know, for most Americans, war is something that happens far away. And then unless they have family involved, which obviously thousands of families do, but for most people, like, it's not a real thing. Americans, and we see this a lot these days in their current administration, but Americans see all their countries as something for them to go on and take over and play with. The issue is, and the man from OMA was saying this on the radio, was like, we haven't even got a troubles pension sorted. So we are still living with the trauma, the poverty, the addiction, all the things that go along with the troubles. So it still feels very current to us. It's not like a game about World War II. It's not like a game about Vietnam because it's real to us. But we also can't expect to be treated differently from every other conflict in the world.
It's probably like annoying. And also the idea that people are making, if it's a failure, you're like, grand, they deserved it. But if they do really well and make lots of money out of it.
Just to point out, one of the deck cards here says car bomb on it. Like the Oma bomb was a car bomb. Like that, to me, is a bit hateful.
If they start selling add-ons to reflect the different types of IRA, like if, you know, the original thing does just comes with the provisionals and then they'll sell plugins with the contract.
Yeah, with ANLA and all on it.
Red Branch Knights, the LVF and all of that. It also sounds like something where people from the North, at some point, they're going to go out with somebody from America. They'll be in America and they'll go on a date and it'll be like, hey, do you want to go back to mine?
And play a board game.
And they can see, and the board game is peeping out. You know what? I bought this. I thought you might like this. That would be red flag, I'd say.
That would be the ick heard around the world.
Yeah, the red flag commandos. And so, like, they've done the famine already. The famine was described, the Great Hunger begins as a game that simulates good times in Ireland at the start of the 19th century as the Irish population expanded, thanks to the potato.
Mm.
Well, I think there's other stuff, like it's not just nutrition. I think there's also reproduction. This new crop is a godsend, allowing people to raise enough food for a whole family on a small, rocky plot of land. Technically true, but missing some context around the penal laws and all that. They became dependent on the prolific tubers. But in 1845, the blight arrived, utterly destroying the potato harvest. Look, again, it's all about the too soon aspect. I think we're just going to have to let the famine slide.
Yeah, I think we'll have to let the famine slide. Yeah. I don't know. I feel very torn. I understand why victims are annoyed, but I really do think this is just a yank harebrained idea and we'd all do it. Because as I said yesterday on the radio, this is the best marketing he could have never bought.
Yeah.
Like, I think they know that this is going to offend people and they're just going to horse on and do it anyway. But isn't that the code which all most Americans love by?
Yeah, well, I mean, let's see how they react if somebody brings out a 9/11.
Well, that's what Andrea Gilligan said to me on Newstalk. She said, well, what do you think they'd make of a 9/11 board game? But like, have you seen some of the merch you can buy about 9/11? A lamp I saw once.
Yeah. For our heroes.
Okay, pop quiz.
Yes.
If I said the number 10 million, do you? So there were 10 million of these sold in Ireland last year from just one place. What do you think I'm talking about? Wasn't fucking houses, I'll tell you that.
Parking discs for Cork. Have you ever parked in Cork, by the way? On the street, still use parking discs. And it is the most, it's so steampunk. Like, you get the sheet out and then you scratch with your key.
Oh, yes.
Year, what hour?
No, the north is blighted with apps. I have about five different parking apps for Derry and Belfast. It's a joke. Anyway.
Are you saying that the harmonious community in the north has somehow split into several rival parking apps, provisional apps?
Yeah. Anyway, 10 million, what do you think it is?
Letters to people who haven't paid their TV license.
Chicken fillet rules.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm not saying that in like a ha 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 chicken fillet rules.
Yeah.
I think chicken fillet rules have become, people now refer to chicken fillet rules when they're talking about something that's quite naff and corny. It's that paddywhackery is no longer called paddywhackery. Now a modern version of that is called, we would call it chicken fillet rule humour.
And have we finally succumbed to the tidal wave of chicken fillet roll related features on podcasts by talking about a chicken fillet roll?
Yeah, so like it's that kind of like rubber bandits, horse outside, what do you have on your chicken fillet roll? Bollocks that we have to deal with.
16 years later, we finally succumbed. Okay, let's have it.
Okay,
what do you like in your chicken fillet roll?
No, we're not doing this.
Okay.
So, Centra alone, all the Centras in Ireland sold nearly 10 million chicken fillet rolls in 2025, helping to push up sales for the company 4.6% to 2.2 billion.
Yeah.
A Centra.
Yeah.
Look, they are on every corner, to be fair, and they are great. I don't want to badmouth the other ones. Do you ever like be in a different type of no name but chain?
Who would also welcome news agent sponsors?
Yeah.
Do
you ever go on to a Centra? You're like, this.
Yeah.
This is a deli. This is a shop.
They know.
Centra's retail group said the deli section delivered growth of 7.4% during last year. The fine summer weather also boosted performance with the company's Mood ice cream brand, increasing sales by 15% over the summer months. And Frank and Anna's Coffee recorded year-on-year sales growth of nearly 11%, with more than 26 million cups sold annually. That is mad. Like, if we're only in a country of, say, 5 million people, because they don't count the north because they're partitionists, right? So there's like 5, 6 million people.
I think it's just easier to work it from a business point of view. The different. I'd say they'd love to do the whole
lot. We have centres in the north too.
Yeah.
But 26...
It's just nice though. They're more Protestant looking. So that's tape.
Because of Brexit, they have to get their ham somewhere else.
Yeah.
26 million cups of coffee and there's only 5 million people in the country.
Well, you know who I blame? There's teenagers drinking coffee now. There's no need.
We are like one of the highest per capita, highest rates of coffee drinkers. I think it's just the weather. I think we're just cold and wet.
Yeah.
Also, Centra introduced, see if I hear the word fucking protein again. Centra also introduced a high protein egg muffin in the past year, which was a standout success, which sold over 1 million in its first year. 1 million people bought an egg sandwich from Centra.
Yeah.
I have to draw a line at eating an egg from a deli.
Well, no, I mean, I'm sure it's perfectly safe.
Yeah, it's not that. But, to me, anything that's been sitting,
yeah,
I don't want to mess with eggs that have been sitting.
I'm a strong believer in eggs being that you make them yourself when you put them on bread. I mean, I'm kind of funny with, I don't like potatoes anywhere near bread either. I feel like they
are... You don't have a chip sandwich?
No.
Oh.
I think it's an abomination. I think the idea of potatoes...
Multiple carbs? And,
yeah, it's just, it's incestuous. It's like, you know, it's like having ketchup on tomatoes.
Like when people put bacon on burgers. Polygamy.
Yeah, let's have it. We'll put it in. I'd like to know whether they're counting chicken fillet wraps. Because that might be...
No, they said it was just rolls.
Just the rolls. Do you remember? Maybe you don't. So the baguette, right?
It used to be the Cuisine de France.
Cuisine de France. And... when Thierry Henry handled the ball in 2009, that was one of the reasons why Ireland didn't qualify for that World Cup, for the 2010 World Cup. There were people calling for a boycott of Cuisine de France. It's like,
which isn't an Irish company as well.
It's like calling for a boycott of Eamon de Valera. It doesn't sound like an Irish surname.
So, although chicken fillet rolls have become synonymous with pattywackery and... Yeah, it's like they're fucking always asking Paul Mescal what he puts on his chicken fillet roll. Like all this really redundant sort of humour.
One day he should just answer, my cock. And just end it there and then.
There goes that Centra sponsorship we were trying for.
That was if somebody from Spar asked him.
But that's only, so 10 million chicken fillet rolls from Centra. That's not including Spars. That's not including petrol stations. That's not including nearby. The amount of chicken fillet rolls that we're eating is wild.
I wonder as well, I'd like to get stats on how many are delivered, because like, does a chicken fillet roll mean everybody's at work? Do you know, is it a work related sandwich? That used to be the thing.
I think it's uni and college.
Yeah.
And schools. I have a really, really awful confession.
Okay.
Like I still think about this and be like, Jesus, Eva. It's last Patrick's Day, not Patrick's Day last, the Patrick's Day before, I was out and had a few beverages. And the next day, the weather was terrible and I was really, really, really hungover and I really wanted a chicken fillet roll. And I went on Deliveroo and had one delivered. But obviously, it costs more when you get it delivered. And some poor fella had to come on a bicycle and deliver me a chicken fillet roll. And I paid €16.
€16.
Oh, I'm affronted. I hope my mom doesn't hear this. I am affronted.
Like, if you had that €16 now, you'd have a house. Right? You know what I mean? Did he or she hand over the chicken fillet roll? Have the delivery people now perfected the art of not showing disgust at people's laziness? Like when they hand over absolutely anything?
I think I couldn't meet his eye. Like I was so embarrassed that I had paid €16 for a chicken fillet roll. I think this is relatively good news, but it's not part of our good news section. A nun from Donegal, it's actually quite close to Derry, she's from Drumagill, has been appointed to a senior role in the Vatican. Sister Mary Barron, who, as I said, is originally from Drumagill between Derry and Letterkenny, but is currently based in Ghana, has been named as the consultant to the Dicastery of Interreligious Dialogue.
I've never seen that word before.
Me either.
Dicastery or Dicastery?
Dicastery.
Tell us the correct pronunciation if you're fluent in
Vatican. Wonder if we've any priests that listen.
They're pretty open-minded. Catholic with a small C, probably listening to all sorts.
Anyway, this rule is in a department within the Catholic Church central ruling body, the Roman Curia. It all sounds very conclave. Deals with all the church's relations from non-Christian religions, except for Judaism, which has its own relations commission. Sister Baron is the superior general of the Missionary Sisters of Our Lady of the Apostles, Jesus Christ, a missionary congregation founded in France with the aim of working in Africa.
So I like their acronym though. Hola.
Hola. So she has carried out missionary work across Africa, on you go, Mrs., and has worked in rural communities, including tackling HIV. In late 2024, Pope Francis appointed her to the Dicastery for Evangelicization.
Evangelicization, that's what that one is, yeah.
Okay, thank you. She described it at the time as a great honour. So now she joins a team of around 30 from all around the globe, which includes lay people as well as clergy, and they assist the mission of dialogue through research, reflection, and their own activities. So basically, this lovely little lady from Donegal, Mary Baron, she will work with people of like Hindu and Muslim faith so that the Catholic Church can have better relations with other religions.
Yeah.
So on you go, Mrs. If you're going to be dealing with like interfaith dialogue, there may be some like conflict there. I just think the presence of a Donegal person always is going to calm stuff down.
Yeah.
As someone who used to work in a pub in Donegal, very few arguments, very few fights.
Are there Donegal bouncers or do they have to be brought in from Derry?
I don't actually think I've ever seen a bouncer in a... Obviously in nightclubs, shout out Letterkenny. It's been some big nights there. But I would say, oh yeah, a lot of them are Derry. And all the fights I saw in Donegal nightclubs was usually Derry people.
It's like an Electric Picnic when, like, the first couple of years they used to have, like, local people preventing liggers from getting into the VIP area. But then they brought in, like, basically a load of gallo glasses from Scotland, like mercenaries, because then you couldn't claim my brother's in there. And they'd be like, I don't care who your brother is.
So, yeah, I just feel like having, a nice but stern Donegal nun. Do like, here now, lads.
Yeah.
That's enough of that. Like, I know of one of my friend's aunties was a school teacher in Donegal, and her daughter booked her flight and put the wrong, because Donegal people never go by their own surname. They usually get a different surname.
Okay.
Because all their surnames are Doherty.
Okay.
You get a different family name. And her boarding pass for a Ryanair flight was booked under the wrong name. And she was such a like stern Donegal school teacher that they just let her on.
Yeah.
They were like, yeah, do you know what? It's fine. Like,
in my 25 years as the person at the Ryanair gate, I've never done this before, but something about you has melted my heart.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for a nice, stern Donegal granny in an interfaith role.
Also, Irish people generally find themselves not necessarily representing Ireland, but just being in diplomacy roles, like quietly being in, you know, very powerful people in the world. Reminds me of, briefly, the Pope, in between popes. He was from Drimna. Remember Kevin O'Farrell? Before the current Pope was elected, there was a 77-year-old man, I think, Kevin O'Farrell from Drimna.
He was like our like assistant manager who was kind of stepped in.
Caretaker, yeah. And he had the codes to whatever weapons they have.
He had the Da Vinci codes.
Yeah, exactly. So he's the most powerful man in the Catholic Church. The Camerlengo, which is just an amazing job title. I know it sounds like a van that frequently gets broken into.
Carries all your kids to GAA.
Yes, but a Camerlengo is, that and stevedore are two jobs I'd like to have.
Steeplejack.
Stevedore is somebody who unloads ships.
Oh.
A steeplejack is somebody who climbs high buildings. And a Camerlengo is the interim head of
the Catholic Church
in between Pope X and Pope Y.
Oh, very good. Well done to Kevin O'Farrell. I hope he's doing
well. Yeah, well, he's probably gone. He's retreated back into the backroom team now. He's coaching the under 21 team or something. Yeah.
Colm, do you have some good news for us on this very wet week? The weather is depressing life out of me.
I mean, it's just weird rain. Normally, like, it's Dublin-centric rain, so you're going to hear an awful lot more about it. Like, aforementioned Donegal people and people generally in the West side-eye, raised eyebrow meme looking at us mourning about it.
Just for our listeners, fun fact, the wettest place in Ireland is Athenry and the wettest place in the UK is Derry.
Okay.
It rains every day in Derry.
Keeping both records on the island. So proud. And so at the moment, Storm Chandra, we got a lick of another. There was a storm last week that should have had a name because I had to get off my bike for the first time ever. You know, the way you don't expect, you know, if there's a storm.
Imagine you had been paparazzi'd, you would never have recovered. Your reputation would have been done.
I know.
All those cushy jobs and MCing for semi-state agencies would have been taken away from me.
No, that's part of my appeal, that everyman appeal, where they're just like, you know, he's hard-hitting, but he arrives on a bicycle. He's a man of the people.
Yeah.
They know that the Merc is parked in Drury Street. But so lots of bad weather, but this is good news. So, you know, the way they bring pets into hospitals and it just generally reduces...
Horse therapy.
Yes, reduce. It depends on the size of the door.
That but
it
doesn't reduces. Mean take ketamine, listeners.
Okay.
Some of them do, I know you.
Yeah, and you may have missed all of the previous episodes. You may be experiencing some missing time. So this is... bringing people into a situation that they're not normally brought into. It was an innovative program that has just finished up that saw newborn babies being brought into primary school classrooms.
A mum brings a baby into a primary school class.
A mum brings a baby into a primary school class. So the babies are from Talla, Clondalkin and Ballyfermot and are brought to schools.
Hard nut babies. Babies not phased by a classroom full of kids.
Exactly, yeah. And they were brought to them throughout the year, helping children connect with their own emotions, relate their own experiences to what the babies are encountering.
That is gorgeous.
And I think it should be brought into workplaces. And, you know, this baby's experiencing frustration a bit like when that email didn't have an attachment and then it just snowballed and nobody dealt with that issue.
Or everyone's replying all.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Oh, kind of sidebar. So in the world of... local community groups, every so often somebody will make the mistake of CCing.
Oh!
And my favourite end to this, and it pretty much nearly ended the group, was, well, everybody stop fucking replying all. Just a general public service announcement. We don't all need to be on this email.
Yeah.
And, I mean, sorry, back to babies. This just talking through my arse here. But children of any age don't see as many children of other ages as they used to. So, families are smaller.
Yeah.
So teenagers don't mind as many babies as they used to.
No.
And you don't play on the green with everybody age 4 up to 17. Because, like, play is segmented by age now. Or, you know, maybe in the creche you do. It depends on the age group. So a lot of children mightn't see a baby. And if you're a lot of smaller families, and if you're in a family where the apartment's too small and parents aren't going to have a second child anytime soon, you know, you mightn't see a baby.
Or even if you don't have a house and people are putting off having babies because they can't afford it.
A shout out to them as well.
Shout out to all my friends.
So Holly Howell, project leader of Roots of Empathy.
Great name.
Told The Echo, in Roots of Empathy, what we try to do is look at the emotional side of learning. We help the children develop more pro-social skills like kindness, caring, inclusion and sharing. And then they say, we give all the little babies a little certificate just saying thanks for being a tiny teacher.
Oh!
And we also give them the tiny little teddy to say thank you for a job well done. And just like any teacher, then the child, little baby, takes a 3 month holiday.
Yeah, it reminds me of, you know, in Japan, they keep nurseries and old folks' homes in the same building because being around small children forces elderly people to move more and their brains to work because you're imparting knowledge and wisdom onto the little kids.
Yeah. Japan, home of my favourite reality show with the slightly iffy title of Old Enough, where they get toddlers. Have you seen this?
Sounds like fucking Son Jeffrey Epstein. Would
no, it's fine. Relax. Step away from the innuendo. They'll say to a toddler, your dad's forgotten his lunch. Can you bring his lunch to him? So in this Japanese town, this like 3-year-old or 4-year-old will navigate their way down to like the port.
No
where
way.
Their dad's working, they'll bring him his lunch. And then they'll have like loads of people. Obviously, so it's obviously on camera.
Monitoring.
So just, and then they'll interact with people, like if the child needs to find how to get somewhere. But like, the child's well able for it.
I was going
to
say,
I'm telling you, more of it is needed. Yeah. Not enough chimney sweeps. Sorry, did that come out? Anyway, well done to... So that was The Echo. Thanks for Shadow Echo for that story.
If you want to Google it, it's called Roots of Empathy.
Yeah, and it's Barnardo's and bringing babies in and... I don't know. Do you know what? It might be even good for immunity. Maybe just add to the old pool of germs and give everyone a tough one. My good news is I was in my first ever... I ran a race at the weekend.
What? Like a dad race?
No, well, a road race. Yeah, like I'd win the dad race for being best dad ever. But this is just Rahini 5-mile run. My first time ever entering a race. Like, no, I'd
assume you're pretty fast. You put it on legs.
I came 1800th out of 5,000. But I'd never
That's not bad.
I'd never been in a race where people are encouraging you. before.
Oh, no way.
And it's quite the rush. It's very funny though. Like you'd be running past somebody and then there's, you know, somebody be saying, great running. And you're like, thanks. And I don't really know if like my running was great. Like how can they tell? Like you're using your legs. Fair play. But yeah, it's a Raheny.
A wonderful gait that man has.
Exactly. Yeah. Or a gatch, as we say in Cork. 5,000 people running around Raheny on the only dry day this century. It has been raining ever since. So well done to people who organise stuff. And well done to the people in high-vis and out of high-vis who stand on the side of the road applauding people who are running around working through their own shit.
Yeah, I love seeing
fair play.
The Dublin Marathon and people standing handing out stuff with signs and playing music, and it's great. Well done. My good news is that I'm going to Derry this weekend.
Okay.
Well, it's good news and bad news. It's Bloody Sunday, so.
Okay. Swings and roundabouts. Yeah.
Yeah. So I go home every Bloody Sunday, but I'm going to a talk on Friday night, and then there's a Radical Book Fair, and then on Sunday we have a memorial at the monument. So we usually have speakers or whatever, which is quite nice.
Tell us about the Radical Book Fair. Is this like anarchist cookbook kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Is that too commercial now?
Yeah, it's like a lot of books from, say, like small independent publishers. The theme of Bloody Sunday Trust is always one word, one struggle. So it'll be a lot of, I would assume this year, like Iranian people publishing stuff, Gaza, all that sort of stuff. So if anyone's around Derry, the Radical Book Fair is on Saturday. It's like the book fair at school, except a lot more like revolution.
Yeah.
And, you know, long stints in prison.
You do have the opportunity at some point in the future to do a funny thing, which is just smuggling in addition of the Troubles board game and just leave it on the table.
Oh, yeah.
And put 85 euro as the price tag on it just to see.
Yeah.
Like, it'd be a good way of telling how radical are people really if they're all like, like if you put it next to the most socialist of the Republican socialist groups, just put it next to them so people think that it's selling it.
Yeah, I remember.
And they've taken ownership of the story.
A joke used to go around Leinster House years ago, obviously, because Paul Murphy and Owen O'Brien and Richard Boyd Barrett all went to private schools, and someone laughed and joked and said, I wish I had enough money to be socialist.
That's why it's centrist. It's the only way. Let me get stuff done gently and slowly, and it'll be fine.
Okay. That's us for this week's A Few Scoops. Stay in touch. You can email at afewscoops@goloudnow.com. We would love to hear your good news, and we will have a chaser this week. We will be talking about ice, not the thing for your drink, but the semi-fascist group that are currently murdering American citizens.